So we just heard from Melissa Etheridge from her album Fearless Love with Gently We Row. And I absolutely love the message and intentions of that song. There are four lines, however, that truly stand out for me, and they always linger in my mind and heart long after I'm listening to the song. They are, I wrapped my arms around my own daughter as she fell into her place in time, and as her mind creates her illusions, I won't complicate hers with mine. And then we got a bit of advice from Dolly Parton from her album Backwoods Barbie with Better Get to Livin'. So I am finished for the day, and I'm going to hand you off to Ashley Bentley of the AMS Sexual Assault Support Center. And she has some guests who are going to discuss their experiences and opinions of the current state of women's representation in the media. Have a great day.
Tune in to CITR 101.9 FM on March 8th, 2014, as we celebrate International Women's Day with 14 hours of programming. From 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., we will highlight female programmers, musicians, activists, artists, and athletes. Women's equality has made positive gains, but the world is still unequal. International Women's Day celebrates the social, political, and economic achievements of women while focusing attention on areas that require further action. Our 14 hours of International Women's Day programming is one of thousands of events throughout the world honoring the role of women. Join us on CITR 101.9 FM from 8 to 10 on March 8th and be inspired. For more information about the programming schedule, visit www.citr.ca.
Due to overwhelming demand, a second night has now been added to Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds Vancouver performance this summer. While the June 30th show has sold out, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, along with special guest Mark Lanigan, will be returning to the Orpheum Theatre the following night, July 1st. Show on sale on Friday, March 7th at 10 a.m. at all Ticketmaster locations and at Ticketmaster.ca.
Tree don't care what the little bird sings. We go down with the dew in the morning light.
For more information, visit nickcave.com.
Are you not sure where to go on campus? Traveling late at night and afraid to go alone? Call SafeWalk, a free service where a co-ed team will take you anywhere you need to go on campus. Don't walk alone. For a walk, add SafeWalk to your phone. Call 604-822-5355. That's 604-822-5355. Alternatively, use a UBC Blue phone and ask for SafeWalk, approach any SafeWalk team, or drop by our office on the main floor of the sub across from the gallery lounge.
Because you're mine, I walk the line.
I think that
morning. You are tuned in now to International Women's Day on CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Eleanor, and I'm a member of the CITR Student Executive here at UBC. The track that we just listened to start us off this morning was by Sia. That's called Breathe Me off of her 2004 album, Color the Small Ones. Today is a very special day on CITR. We are doing 14 hours of programming to celebrate women and talk about the amazing contributions that they make to all of the places that they are, and as well as focus some more attention on areas that need to be reformed and need more discussion happening surrounding them. So for this hour, I have some very special guests in the studio with me to talk about representations of women in the media and other things surrounding that. So if you guys could introduce yourself to all of the listeners, that would be fantastic.
Thank you. So my name is Jara Hodge, and I am the editor of the blog Gender Focus, and I'm also a former UBC Women's Studies student, and I'm really happy to be here to talk about these issues.
My name is Ashley Bentley. I am the assistant manager of the Sexual Assault Support Center here at UBC. Thank you for having us on the show today, Eleanor.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it's just really exciting to be able to talk about this and celebrate International Women's Day with some really awesome women.
My name is Madison Slobin. I'm a current student at UBC. I work with Pride UBC as their political coordinator, and I've also done work with the March to Reclaim Consent and that campaign, as well as the I'm a Feminist campaign, and just more generally student organizing.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you all so much for being here today and agreeing to talk about some of these things. So I think we'll get started by just a basic question, which is, what does International Women's Day mean to you?
Well, I think that you said it in a way in your introduction, that it's a chance to reflect on what we've achieved as women, but also how far we have yet to go, and important to make sure that when we're talking about where we've come, that we're also acknowledging that there's a lot of women in the world who don't share the same privileges that, say, someone like me has as a Western university-educated, white, straight feminist. So to make sure that we're understanding that our experiences aren't necessarily universal, and that there's a lot to do even to just get all women in the world up to the level that more privileged are right now.
Definitely.
I think for me, International Women's Day is about uncovering the silenced voices of women who still don't have the ability to celebrate or be celebrated as women.
Definitely.
Yeah. I think it's important for me to celebrate the amazing women that I have in my life, and all the work that they do, and also to celebrate the women that we have in this community who are constantly fighting social justice every day, trying to make changes within the city and within Canada. And, you know, I think, as we've all said, we definitely need to look at how we can make changes within society to create safer communities and to change our culture. And also the representations of women that are represented within society.
Perfect. Great. Okay. So the first thing that we're going to talk about to get things going with representations of women in the media, something that we are inundated with every day, I think a lot of the time, that we don't even realize the messages that are being sent to us. So how do you feel that the female body is presented within mainstream media that we see every day?
Well, I think that it's really idealized, and that the bodies that we see, especially in fictional TV and movies and music videos, it's by and large thin white women. The thin ideal that we see in media is thinner now than it has been in previous decades, and also thinner compared to average women's bodies than it ever has been. That leads to a whole host of issues, and also able-bodied. So those, I think, are the big things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the representation of the female body in society is, like, really problematic. I think, you know, with what Jaro was saying, that just, like, you know, this, like, thin white idealism, it's just really unrealistic. I mean, if we look at, like, the average woman and their size, it's not, you know, the representation of women within the media is not accurate to that representation. I think that it creates a lot of pressure for women to be a certain way and to look a certain way. And when we're looking specifically at things like gossip magazines, like, there's so much photoshopping and editing that happens with celebrities, and
yeah.
and so many women feel that they, you know, that's what they should aspire to look like. And then that, with all of the articles about how to dress, what makeup to wear, what diet you
who
should be
wore
doing.
It better.
Yeah, the who wore it better. It like sets up competition between women for mm-hmm. a start, which is really unhealthy. And then it's, you know, it's also just like, you know, putting so much pressure on women. And when we look at, you know, there's been such a rise in eating disorders, especially with young girls between the ages of 10 to 15, it's just so troubling that that's what they're, you know, that's what we're growing up with.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think with, like, the beauty pageant kind of thing that's happening, especially, you know, it's starting younger and younger with girls at, like, the age of 4 wearing makeup and...
Yeah, and it's being very much, it's being made so popular through shows like Toddlers and Tiaras and things like that, you know, which I feel that a lot of people tune into that because they're like, oh, this is so crazy, you know, and if you ask them, they'd say, like, well, I think that that's wrong, or I think that I would never do that with my child, but yet here they are still watching that show and giving it views and ensuring that it continues to be aired, right? So it's kind of strange.
Yeah, and also on that, there's, you know, when you talk about getting into eating disorders, but also just really unhealthy body image, that there's two sides to that. There's the carrot that's held out of the thin ideal, that this is what makes you valuable, but there's also the stick that's fat shaming, and that says, like, look at how our society treats fat people every day, and that this is something that you should fear and be shamed for. And we see that in media in the way that fat characters are very underrepresented, and when they are there, they're there for comic relief, or they're there to be, you know, in news media, all these shows about, like, gastric bypass surgery, like, miracle recovery stories, and they don't really explore what that means in terms of its social implications and what it says about what we think makes a person valuable.
Definitely.
Also, when we're looking at, like, the objectification of women, it's really difficult for me to actually find news and media sources where women are not being objectified. There's some really easy tests to do, like, is the woman being used as a piece of furniture? Are they zooming in on specific parts of her body? What kind of product is she trying to sell? And after going through that checklist of things, almost never do you see, like, an empowered woman in the media.
Definitely, definitely. Great. Okay. So moving on, this question I think is quite relevant to the year that we've had at UBC and just some of the things that have been happening on campus. So what role do you feel that rape culture plays into the representations of women?
Well, I think that the representations really reinforce and help recreate the culture continuously, because rape culture is about shaming women for their sexuality, implying that it's their responsibility to control their bodies and, like, maintain their purity. But on the other hand, it creates this idea that if you don't attract men, then you're not valuable. So it makes an impossible situation for women.
Yeah.
I think stemming from the previous question as well, in terms of, like, rape culture, like, specifically within the media and what Madison was saying about how women's bodies are, like, objectified, I think, like, to add another level to that, like, there's rape culture in so much advertising, like, especially with, like, Dolce & Gabbana. Just, you know, there's so many images of, you know, men kind of, like, forcing women down to the ground, and there's one particular image that's, like, springs to mind where it looks almost like a gang rape scene.
Yeah.
And I don't think that people, you know, realize that, you know, it's normalizing rape within our society by having these images. You know, like, Ford had a really controversial, like, advertisement where the former Italian prime minister had a group of, like, three women bound in the back of his trunk.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and there was some other car advert. I can't remember the company, but, you know, there was this pair of legs just hanging out the back of the trunk as well. And it's, you know, it's, I think people think, you know, rape culture is a joke, and it's just not. I think a lot of people think it doesn't exist as well within society.
Which we all know is, especially after this year, with some of the stuff that happened with the Sauder chants and the assaults on campus, it's definitely not true. It is. It definitely still exists. And we have to do things like this to kind of...
Yeah, I think the problem for me is also that rape culture continues to sell, and the fact that, like, there is a market for this type of depiction is the real problem, because advertisers want to put up things that people want to see. Yeah. And as long as people want to see it, they will continue to supply it. So I think the change needs to come both from the advertisers, but also from the consumers.
Definitely, definitely. That's
I think we see it in live action stuff as well as advertising. For example, you know, I think that with, like, Law & Order SVU has an average weekly audience of around 8 million viewers just in the States. So I think it's probably safe to say that's one of the single largest sources of information that people have about violence against women and sexual assault. And while there's some evidence that it's encouraged more women to report their rapes, there's also a lot of really problematic glamorization in the way that the scenes are filmed. There's an overrepresentation of white women as victims being attacked by strangers. And there are actual lines, even going back to the older episodes, where there was one episode where they had a he said, she said story, and at the end they asked the viewers to vote on whether or not the man was guilty. And there was another episode where the first district attorney, Alice Cabot, says, all rape victims lie about something, you know that. And so the fact that even these characters that are supposed to be on the sides of the victims are being, like, having these types of opinions that are really part, like, at the heart of rape culture.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. I think it's easy for people to say, well, it's TV, it's not real, like, you know, we don't, you know, it's a false thing, but the message is still inherently there, right? And it's being taken in whether we're aware of it or not. So continuing from there, what role does sexism play in the representation of women?
Lots.
Yeah, it's a big question.
I mean, sexism is really multifaceted. So there's, I mean, I think the fact that you aren't showing women in equal proportions is a really clear example. If you look at the number of women behind the camera, that's even starker. That you're not showing a full range of women. It's that basically says this is the type of woman that is valuable.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, and I think, you know, like, when we're looking at media and, like, the media industry and who's in positions of power, you know, it's white men. And, you know, so we're, from that perspective, like, everything that we're consuming is through the male gaze.
Yeah.
And I think because of that reason, you know, women are, there's a lot of sexism against them. And, you know, I think even with things just like news reporting and like chat shows and all of that kind of stuff, like, there's still, you know, when we look at, like, femininity and masculinity, like, and, you know, we need to look beyond, like, the gender binaries really to, with that piece as well. And I think that when we're looking at that and we see, like, traditional roles of what is feminine, and that's still represented, and, you know, and I find it really frustrating when people say that, like, oh, there is equality. We've reached a quality.
Yeah, a really good example of that is sports reporting. That, in addition, so, you know, we all would be able to say, yeah, I know women's sports don't get equal coverage, but if you look at the stats for ESPN, like, 96% of the stories are about men's sports, and, like, 1% are women's sports, and the rest is co-ed sports. And then there's actually still a lot of people who will defend that as saying, well, it's because, you know, women's sports aren't as competitive, and the women athletes aren't at the same level. So that's a really good example of, like, concrete, huge inequality. Also, the way women in politics are represented is a good example of sexism. You look at, like, the Hillary Clinton sort of, like, either she's crying and too emotional, or she's ball busting and too frigid. And
yeah.
It it's totally not, it's a lose-lose for women in politics.
Exactly, exactly. It's impossible to win.
Yeah, there's also this idea of the two extremes. You're either, like, the Virgin Mary or you're the bad girl, and because those extremes exist and women are always held up to those two ideas, it makes it really incredibly hard for a woman to be represented as she is and having that be a positive thing. And just this idea that women cannot win because this dichotomy exists and they're held up to this. I also think the tokenization of those women who are represented in a way that's empowering or represented as they are, as saying that we have defeated sexism and oppression doesn't exist. And I'm really tired of those women being held up as examples to justify ways that sexism doesn't work anymore, right. Which we all know is not, in fact, the case.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, well, we're going to take a short break and play a little bit more music. You are listening to International Women's Day programming on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. The next track that I'm going to play for you is by Sky Ferreira, and this track is called You're Not the One.
Yeah.
And we're back. That was You're Not the One by Sky Ferreira off of her album Nighttime, My Time that came out this September. This is International Women's Day on CITR, 14 hours of programming, celebrating and discussing women and their roles throughout the world. I am joined by some very special guests. I've got Jera, Ashley, and Madison, and we are discussing representations of women in the media. So before we played that track, we were talking about the role of sexism and how that adds and changes representations of women in the media. And there's actually a documentary called Misrepresentation, and that talks about the representation of female political leaders in the media. So for people who haven't seen Misrepresentation, can you tell them a little bit about what it's about and kind of what, you know, why they might want to check it out?
I think it's a really interesting documentary, and as well as like exploring the role of female political leaders within society and how they're scrutinized and how there's a lot of sexism against them, it also does explore just general representations of women in the media. It looks at photoshopping, it looks at just various representations. I think there's a screening coming up at some point, which I think Jara is going to talk about a little bit later. But yeah, it's definitely something that you can check out. And we also have it in our lending library at the SASC if anybody ever wants to borrow it.
Cool. Mm. So sorry, yeah, you said that there's a screening of that film.
Yeah, the City of Vancouver Women's Advisory Committee is co-hosting a screening at the Rio Theatre on March 30th. Cool. And it's $8 in advance, $10 at the door, so it's a good deal for a movie, and there's going to be a great panel afterwards with women who work in the media and in athletics and other areas where women experience unequal representation. And you can go to the Rio Theatre website and buy your tickets.
Perfect. Cool. Okay, so that's March 30th. So that's talking about representations of female political leaders, and a lot of that representation, I think, is, I mean, obviously on the internet, but as well as on TV, which is kind of what our next question is about. So the stereotypes of femininity shown within television, and how this affects representations of women.
Yeah, there's a few different things, but when you look at, for example, politics, going back to that briefly, because, Hillary Clinton's like the clear example, but this does happen closer to home, and as much as, you know, I don't politically agree with our premier on a lot of things, there was the incident last year, I think, before the election, where like a radio host called her a MILF on the asked her a question about that, and there was another, a pundit, who drew attention to the fact that her shirt showed some cleavage in the legislature. And just even the fact that we're talking about that, I think, is really disgusting.
Yeah.
And what was worse about that second example was then the media literally went and asked her to comment on it. And there was a headline on CBC that was, Clark's cleavage spurs tempest in a C cup. And just like, oh God, where was the journalistic ethics behind that?
There was none.
Yeah, it's appalling. I think that comes from this idea that women's bodies are the most important thing, that it's the first thing you notice, and it's totally okay to comment on it and to judge other women because of the way that they look.
Right.
Yeah. And also, the way that I find women gain positive attention as politicians is as, like, the mother and the homemaker, and that's their key into voting, is really demonstrating their ability to do those two things. And I don't think I've ever seen an interview with a female politician where they didn't make some sort of reference to her home or her family. Mm-hmm. And I think women are worth a lot more than just their mothering abilities, but that really doesn't come across in interviews with female politicians.
Yeah, the province end of the year interview with Christy Clark was the only one, thankfully, that mentioned prominently in the story. Oh, and by the way, she says she's still single.
Mm. I remember even with Sarah Palin, mm-hmm. all the attention on her daughter and other things like that and her family life. And you don't hear it or see it with male politicians. It's just not really focused on at all. Like, mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you one fact about, I mean, I don't follow politics very yeah. much, but I couldn't tell you anything about any of the families of male politicians.
Yeah, or it's on their terms, like Stephen Harper's Christmas cards and
of course.
Things like that. It's not the same type of judgment about your capacity. The way that you're adhering to femininity is an indication of how well you would do as a leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I also think about Michelle Obama and how she's constantly talked about within the media. I mean, I think she seems to get a lot of, you know, there's no scrutinizing about what, you know, what she's doing. You know, the media seems to love her, but at the same time, it's like it's all about her hair and what she's wearing and her style and how she's so stylish compared to other first ladies. And
yeah.
Which is just like, yeah, she does look good, but it's like, why do we need to talk about that?
She's doing so many other amazing
yeah,
things,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, exactly. Mm.
You even see that happen in media surrounding musicians and artists, you know, so much of the time it's like this band released a new album or, you know, this girl is so good at this instrument and she's such a babe or, you know, like this sexy new album, mm-hmm. Et cetera, which is great, but it's not like... you're reducing the quality of her musicianship, or so why does that need to be focused on as the selling point? Mm-hmm. You know, like, you should listen to this because it's good, not because the girl who made it is looks a certain way or wears certain clothing, you know? So I've seen discussions on people saying that, you know, like, that shouldn't come into play because mm-hmm. takes away from the art, right?
Yeah, I don't know how many of you saw the BuzzFeed video that was going around where they asked Kevin Spacey questions that women get asked on the red carpet.
And so they
ask him, like, how early did you get up to do your hair or to get ready this morning? And he's really confused. And they're like, who did your hair? And he's like, it just kind of happened. And then, like, we see your mani-pedi. And he gets really confused. And then they ask him if he's wearing Spanx. But those are actually the questions that women are getting asked and men are getting asked about their vision and their craft and
or the stuff they've yeah. been nominated for, right?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, so it's kind of it's taken me a while to realize all of those things that are there, because you just get used to seeing them over and over again. You think that it's normal, and then somebody points it out and you're like, yeah, that's so weird. Why don't different questions, different...
Yeah, different. Not to belabor the point, but yeah, I was at a Star Trek convention last summer, nice. And they were interviewing Nichelle Nichols, who's played Uhura in the original series in the 60s, and the interviewer said, you know, who is your stylist? And she's like, what do you mean? And he's like, who picks out... How do you get your style? And she's like, I go to the store, I see something, and then I buy it, and then I wear it.
That's how it yeah. works. All right. So the next question we have here gets to the topic of violence and how that, how violence against women is portrayed in the media.
Mm-hmm. I think that violence is portrayed within the media as normal. I think it's really normalized, and that again goes back to the point of like rape culture. I think especially when we're looking at the video game industry, I find that really interesting. You know, the way in which they advertise some of their games. There's like one, I can't remember the name of the game, but there's one example where there's a like just a woman's torso and that's it, covered in blood and ripped to shreds. You don't see the head, you don't see any other part of the body, and that's what they're using to advertise the game. And also just in general, like within so many of these games, it's about like shooting women or, you know, killing prostitutes. And it's just really degrading and really sad. And Jerry, you might be able to help me out here, but what's the name of, is it Anna? Somebody that there's a really awesome feminist who does a series of,
Anita Sarkeesian.
Yes. Anita Sarkeesian. She does this, she talks about the violence of women represented within video games and the different representations of women. And it's definitely something I would recommend that you check out. Yeah, I don't know if anyone...
Yeah, her her series is called Tropes Versus Women in Video Games, and I'm sure some people heard that when she started that, there was a huge backlash that she experienced mostly from male video game fans who... and she still is experiencing online from people who feel that she's attacking the thing that they have fun doing when she's raising really valid critiques and asking important questions.
I also think that these tropes really get in the way of dealing with why sexualized violence is still happening, and like really, really easy to show a sex worker experiencing violence, but we never talk about like, is that sex worker an indigenous woman? Is that person a woman of color? Is it a trans woman? Why is it that these women are experiencing sexualized violence so much more than any other, like, identity? Mm-hmm. And it's never, yeah, we never look at why this is happening, but I think that's the most important part.
Right. So we have to go beyond just saying it's happening, and obviously it's not a good thing, and we need to do something about it, but that's not enough. We have to go further and kind of investigate who is being done to. It's really important.
Yeah, there's a tendency to portray really idealized angelic victims who are often white, not poor, straight cis women, and sort of monster attackers who are lurking in the shadows and are strangers. And it has the effect of obscuring the way that most violence happens, which is people being attacked by acquaintances, and that disproportionately the victims are Indigenous women of color. There's disproportionate violence experienced by trans women, and those stories aren't told, and when they are, it can actually be, if that's the only way that those people are depicted, it's like the violence defines them, so they aren't being shown in other ways either.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I was looking a little bit at the reporting surrounding Vancouver's missing and murdered women and the Robert Picton case, and some of the findings I discovered were really interesting. Often the Indigenous identity of women were really played up as if to say that these women were Indigenous. They're sex workers. These identities were mentioned multiple times as being really, really important. But I think that the only reason why they were really important was to verify the fact that society shouldn't be concerned. This doesn't affect you. This doesn't affect the everyday women. This affects like the women on the downtown east side that were asking for it. The other thing that I noticed was that Robert Picton was often depicted as this like violent pig farmer that existed in a rural area away from you. Mm-hmm. And so all of these things perpetuate the idea that if you are a middle-class woman, this is not your problem. And if you are the average white man, this is also not your problem. And really just taking the onus off of people in society who actually have the power to make a change. And to change the way our society structurally looks. But when they're let off the hook and told that this isn't their problem, it really, really can't be solved by them, and responsibility cannot be taken by those individuals.
Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes that's reinforced in the way that with like the Robert Picton case and the murder and missing women cases, and also what we've seen at UBC this year with the sexual assaults and the Frost Chants, is that all of the media reporting essentially is very victim-blaming, doesn't really tell the whole story. And when we're not telling the whole story, and we're, you know, putting the onus on the victim, and also, you know, them to take responsibility for their own actions and looking at safety, it's really taking away with, like, the broader issues about, you know, the systemic problems that we have within society and how, you know, instead of looking at, you know, prevention being safety and carrying around a rape whistle or, you know, not walking alone late at night by yourself, it's about looking at education for people on, you know, prevention of violence against everybody.
Exactly. Yeah, well, because something you said, Madison, is like this idea that, well, it's not your problem, you know, it's only this small proportion. But I think that's kind of one of the purposes of International Women's Day, is that, you know, gender inequality is everybody's problem. Mm-hmm. And that people need to realize that, you know, and it's a changing of everybody's perspectives and kind of looking, trying to find where it starts, you know, and where, like, at what age at what age do girls start to take in these images that they can't even really, they don't even, they're not even aware the...
Well, as young as three.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was a study at Pepperdine University, I think last year, that showed girls... they had to pick from different like figures to play with in a board game that were different body sizes, and almost uniformly the girls were would associate pick the thinner figures and say that they thought those figures were nice and they wanted to be friends with them, and that they thought that the larger figures were friendless, lonely, sad, and we've seen similar experiments done in associating whiteness with beauty, done with children. So it starts really young.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, that's actually the next topic that we're going to get to. But first, we're going to take another short little break and listen to a track by the Courtneys, a local girls band who are very dear to our hearts here at CITR. This track is called Mannion, and it's off of their self-titled album that came out last summer.
Thank you. Right. That was Mannion by the Courtneys off of their self-titled album. Those ladies are actually, I think, about to embark on tour with Tegan and Sarah, another Canadian group. So they're doing very well for themselves. They're also playing live at Squamish this year, so it's pretty awesome. All right, so it's International Women's Day, for those of you just tuning in and who are unaware. We're having a conversation at CITR right now about representations of women in the media. And before we got to that track, we were chatting about the age and kind of the what images and ideas are given to very young girls. You said... Jara, it was as early as three, as young as three, that girls are kind of taking these misrepresentations in. And then we wanted to talk about, too, how young women themselves are sexualized in the media.
Yeah, it's definitely a problem. And I think it's one thing that I'll just bring back this back to misrepresentation for a second. Misrepresentation does a great job of showing how young women are represented as more and more sexualized than they ever have been. But I think it's important to be able to critique that, but also in a way that isn't sort of saying to young women, not trusting them to be able to do that analysis themselves with help, because misrepresentation also shows that when you bring young women together and you start them talking about this, they have the ability to start to break this down. So I need to do it in a way that's saying, like, we're going to work towards educating young women, but in a way that is drawing on their experiences and speaking to where they're at instead of seeing them as sort of helpless.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, a young woman is sexualized a lot more within society. I think it can even be seen in some of the products that they're consuming as well, with things like Barbie dolls and something came out a little while ago called Lingerie Barbie.
Oh, my
which
goodness.
Is really troubling. And also, like, when we look at, like, Halloween and some of the costumes that are available to younger women, it's just, yeah, they're kind of really obscene and really sexualized, and just the expectation, which I think is also played into through like teen magazines as well.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, like, there's all these quizzes about, you know, just how you look and, you know, what boys will like, and it's like, you know, do we really need to be, like, drilling this into young women?
Mm-hmm.
And I also think as well, like, it's, you know, we're not really giving women a choice about who they are and who they want to be. And, you know, when we look at, like, specifically, like, toys and products that young women are consuming, like, there's so much pink stuff that's, like, you know, specifically, like, feminine, and it's like, you know, it's not giving people a chance to explore their gender and what they want to be, so it's very constricting as well.
Actually, just this week there was another study that came out where they had girls play with Barbies, and they had her play with Fashion Barbie and Dr. Barbie and Mrs. Potato Head, and it didn't matter whether she was playing with Fashion Barbie or Dr. Barbie, but that they found that it dampened their career aspirations, that having this scenario play with these idealized body types, even if they were supposed to be a doctor, made the girls less likely to think of themselves as being possibly a doctor in the future. But the same thing did not happen with Mrs. Potato Head.
Interesting.
I find even the way that I compliment kind of children is really telling of societal attitudes, and I would consider myself pretty aware surrounding women's issues and gender issues. However, when I see a little girl, tell her what a pretty dress she's wearing, or how
totally.
Cute her pink nail polish is, her headband, her shoes, her hair, it's like, why am I complimenting a little girl who probably had nothing to do with what she's wearing on her clothes? And when I talk to little boys, it's all about, like, the things that they're interested in intellectually. And that is, I think, very telling and very difficult, because it's become so normalized to, like, break out of giving those types of compliments. But it's really important, because it starts to reinforce things from a really, really young age.
Oh, for sure, for sure. So the last question we have, and we're just about at the end of our hour here, goes to what we feel that men's role is in changing representations of women in the media.
I think that men can play a really important role because part of the message that is sort of drilled into us from such a young age is that what makes us valuable is beauty, but that the purpose of that is to attract a man. So for men to be able to be more conscious of that ideal is not realistic, mm-hmm. and to help educate, take responsibility for educating themselves, and also to talking to their male friends about some of these the issues around the fact that this beauty ideal isn't attainable, but also the objectification, sort of like the banter there is around objectifying women, for guys to be able to say to their friends, like, hey, this isn't cool, this is perpetuating a really problematic scenario, I think can be really powerful and effective, and also to help educate other men on violence against women and rape myths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think adding to that, you know, we are objectifying women within our society, you know, and it's causing violence against women. Sexual assault is like an epidemic within our society. Mm-hmm. And I think that we need to get men on board to be allies to help women do the work. You know, we look at campaigns like the Be More Than a Bystander and what like Jackson Katz is doing with young men in athletics and within the military. And it's such important work that needs to be done. And we need more men to get on board, you know, because as we've mentioned before, this isn't a women's issue. This is an everybody issue.
Exactly.
It's, you know, we need to make societal changes. And in order to do that, we all need to work together. And we also need to include everybody in the conversation and realize that violence affects everyone, you know, not just men, women, but trans people, the LGBT community. There's so much silencing and violence that happens within that community,
mm-hmm.
And we need to all work together just to, you know, end all forms of oppression.
Right. I think also recognizing how gendered stereotypes hurt men as well, the fact that they also have expectations that they could never possibly hope to live up to.
Yeah.
And when they are speaking out and recognizing that those issues exist for themselves, they're also helping to deconstruct how those issues exist for women. So I think really the role of men is so important because gendered stereotypes do affect everybody. And I think that once we all begin speaking out about them, regardless of our gender, our sexuality, our race, we're really going to understand the full scope of these issues and how we need to really work together and stand in solidarity in order to rid ourselves of these ridiculous expectations.
Yeah, for sure. Great. On that note, for people listening and kind of feeling inspired, as I am right now, about the things that we're talking about, do you have recommendations or maybe even things that you're involved with that you would like to see people come out to, or kind of ways to get involved in kind of continuing on a discussion like we're having today?
Yeah, I Am a Feminist Day is a day happening on March 10th, which is this Monday. We have been in the sub all week selling buttons, giving out cookies. We have some great designed posters. And I think the point of this day is really just to show the diversity of feminism at UBC. You can be from whatever gender, whatever background, have whatever political views, but still really believe in like the equality of gender and want to see the equality of women in an end to sexualized violence. So definitely come out to that. We have a Facebook page where you can like us to figure out the events that are going on that Monday. And also we have pins that we've given out, so make sure to wear those. Or if you want to design your own t-shirt, your own pin, wear a sign on Monday. I don't think you should have to pay money to be a feminist. So really, whatever you want to do on Monday to show the world that you believe in equality, I would encourage you all to do so.
Awesome.
Yeah, the SASC is also going to be tabling with I'm a Feminist Day. And if you want to come and paint a community mural, you're more than welcome, and also create your own button. So yeah, I'm really excited about that too. Thank you for mentioning that, Madison. Also later in the month on March 27th in the evening in IKB, we are co-hosting an event with the Consulate of the United States, and Julie Fulcher is coming to do a lecture on the prevention of violence against women. So it's a free event. There'll hopefully be some light refreshments, so I encourage you all to come along. And I think, like, one thing as well just to take away from today in terms of, like, what you can do as well as attending these events, as well as connecting with the SASC and other campus groups and community groups, is realizing that, like, even though media is a form of escapism, that, you know, really thinking about what you're viewing and what that means and how that's detrimental to, you know, society, making assumptions about people. I think we all need to work together to change perspectives. So, yeah, just be mindful.
Great.
I'll quickly again plug the misrepresentation screening happening at the Rio with an awesome panel afterwards at the end of March. So check out the Rio Theater website for that. And it's also important for people to support their community and independent media, because those do tend to have a better representation of the media creators, and they do a better job talking about our issues. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, CITR, yay. But also other independent public broadcasters and blogs. And if the other thing we can do is create our own media, whether that's, you know, tweeting out about these issues or posting on Facebook, or if you want to get more involved and start writing for a feminist blog like Gender Focus, then check us out at gender-focus.com and go to the Write For Us link. It doesn't take a lot of experience to, you just have to want to have your voice heard.
Great, great. Thank you all so much for being here with me today. It was so fantastic to have this conversation. We are continuing on with another great set of programs and interviews and things for International Women's Day on CITR. Nellie Stark is here now, and she's up next with an all-female edition of the Cat's Pajamas, so make sure you stay tuned in for that. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We are going to end with a track that I think is very fitting by the Swedish duo First Aid Kit. They're sisters. This song is called When I Grow Up, and it's a cover of Fever Ray song, so enjoy.